Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, March 26, 2020. Coming up this hour.
The Senate passes a $2 trillion plan to stem the fallout from COVID-19.
Meantime, the human impact of the outbreak continues to mount as deaths in the U.S. pass 1,000.
Now Wall Street prepares for jobless claims data that could be the worst since World War II.
New York City is the nation's hot zone for coronavirus cases. Meanwhile, New Jersey is on track to match New York for COVID-19. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Bushka. Ahead in sports, Mets star Pete Alonso joins the fight against COVID-19, and the Jets continue to load up on defense.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by IBKR, the professional's gateway to the world's markets. Their clients enjoy lowest cost access to stocks, options, futures, forex, and fixed income from a single integrated account. Learn more at IBKR.com.
And global stocks are slumping as the human impact of the coronavirus continues to mount. 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 34 points, Dow futures down 201, and NASDAQ futures down 94. The DAX in Germany is down 1.8%, so is the FTSE 100, and the CAC in Paris down 1.5%. 10-year Treasury up 19 30 seconds, yield 0.80%, yield on the 2-year 0.29%. NYMEX crude oil down 3% or 73 cents at $23.76 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.33% or $5.60 at $16.28.70 an ounce. The euro 1.0947 against the dollar, the yen 110.05. Nathan.
Well, Karen, the U.S. Senate has approved a $2 trillion plan to stem the economic fallout from COVID-19. The legislation passed unanimously just before midnight. Here with details is Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern.
There's pretty much something in there for every part of the economy. First, for the big business, $500 billion for these big corporations, including airlines. But you have to ban buybacks, limit executive bonuses. Then we go on to the small businesses. They got $350 billion in loans. They are bleeding cash. There was optimism there, but originally they wanted cash injection. So didn't get exactly everything they wanted. And then, of course, we're seeing direct checks to Americans. But this is for lower and middle incomes. 1,200 direct checks for each adult and $500 for each child.
The bill now heads to the House, where lawmakers are hoping for quick passage. We spoke with Representative Kevin Brady, a Republican from Texas.
Members will want time to review this bill, but still act very quickly. So I'm hopeful sooner rather than later. And I think the key thing here is this package, it is big, it's targeted, and it will make a difference, both on the healthcare side of this challenge and on, especially on the economic side of this challenge. And because it is designed that way, I predict a very strong support in the House.
The House is scheduled to vote on the bill tomorrow, and President Trump plans to sign the measure immediately.
Small business is in dire need of that rescue package, but there's concern the help could get there too late. Here with the details is Bloomberg's John Tucker, who joins us live. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. The $350 billion in loans will be administered by the Small Business Administration, which isn't known for speed. The SBA's Disaster Loan Assistance Portal this morning reads the following. The portal is undergoing maintenance and will not be available during this maintenance period. It's receiving up to 30,000 phone calls a day, a number that's expected to surge to 60,000. They're so overwhelmed, they're soliciting contractors for call centers. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin has a more positive outlook. He says banks should be able to issue small business loans by the end of next week. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Well, coming up today, we get the weekly reading on jobless claims. It could be the worst report since the end of World War II. Here with more is Bloomberg Economics correspondent Michael McKee.
The consensus forecast in a Bloomberg survey of economists is that filings will quintuple. Businesses across the nation have been slashing jobs amid the coronavirus pandemic, and travel's come to a near halt. But the consensus isn't even close to the highest estimates. S&P Global Ratings and Bank of America see an increase to 3 million. That's more than four times the record of 695,000 set in 1982. Citigroup expects 4 million filers. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thank you. As business shutters and life grinds to a halt, the number of coronavirus cases continues to climb. Deaths in the U.S. have passed 1,000, with infections near 70,000. New York City is responsible for nearly a third of all cases, and that has the White House preparing to send crucial supplies to the area.
I want you to know that I'm doing everything in my power to help the city pull through this challenge. I'm working very hard in New York. It's really, by far, our biggest problem.
Sources tell us FEMA will take charge of allocating medical supplies across the country. Experts warn there is no clear timeline for the peak of the virus or for the ensuing recovery. Anthony Fauci is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases.
You've got to understand that you don't make the timeline. The virus makes the timeline. So you've got to respond in what you see happen. And if you keep seeing this acceleration, it doesn't matter what you say 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You've got to go with what the situation on the ground is.
And Fauci also warns that once this crisis fades, we could see a second cycle.
What we're starting to see now in the Southern Hemisphere countries is that we're having cases that are appearing as they go into their winter season. And if, in fact, they have a substantial outbreak, it will be inevitable that we need to be prepared that we'll get a cycle around the second time.
And infections are climbing in South America with more than 1,000 cases in Brazil, Chile, and Ecuador. South Africa has 700 confirmed infections.
And Japan is seeing an increase in cases as well, and that sent stocks in Asia lower overnight. Here with details is Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in our Singapore Bureau. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Japanese equities were the hardest hit as consumer discretionary stocks slumped almost 8% as Japan moved a step closer toward declaring a state of emergency. Stocks here in Singapore fell after first quarter GDP contracted the most in a decade. In China, the CSI 300 fell 0.7%, and Korean equities reversed earlier gains in Seoul to close down by 1%. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Coming up in an hour from now, Jerome Powell makes a rare appearance on morning television. The Fed chairman sits down for an interview on NBC's Today Show at 7.05 a.m. Wall Street time. Futures this morning are lower, with S&P futures down 35 points, Dow futures down 203. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 6:07 now on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr for a check of more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. State officials in New York are bracing for what they warn could be a large peak in coronavirus cases several weeks from now. New York City, the epicenter of the national outbreak, already has nearly 18,000 infections and nearly 200 deaths. Mayor Bill de Blasio says we shouldn't cling to false hope after President Trump suggested the country could be fully reopened by Easter.
I believe April's going to be tougher than March, and I think at this point May could be even tougher than April, and people need to be ready for that.
But de Blasio says there is one piece of good news.
Supplies have come in from the federal government, from the state government, and elsewhere that have certainly improved our situation this week that'll help us get into next week. That is a ray of light for sure. But we know we're going to have giant challenges ahead in terms of producing enough hospital space, enough personnel who are trained to help us in this crisis, and that ongoing challenge with equipment and supplies.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state needs nearly three times the number of hospital beds it currently has and tens of thousands of respirators. In a news conference, Cuomo said patients may have to share ventilators.
We're exploring splitting, where one ventilator could do two patients. Italy has had to do this because they were forced to do it.
Meanwhile, New Jersey's health commissioner said yesterday the state is on track for the kind of viral surge New York is experiencing. New Jersey has more than 4,400 infections, up from 3,675 on Tuesday. One of Texas's largest county jails is facing a potential coronavirus outbreak. Five Dallas County inmates have now tested positive for COVID-19, with other test results pending. Joe Biden rejected any idea of an April debate with Bernie Sanders, signaling that he views the Democratic nominating contest as essentially over. Biden, during a live-streamed news conference, says, "I think we have had enough debate."
Sanders, however, responded later that he wanted a face-off because it would help inform Americans as they confront the coronavirus. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It's 6:09 on Wall Street and time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. Met star and one of the young faces of the game, Pete Alonso, took time Wednesday to thank doctors and first responders to the coronavirus with a heartfelt message that we can all find ways to appreciate.
It's Pete Alonso from the New York Mets. This disease is definitely grown my appreciation for some simple things in life. For example, like I play baseball, and that's taken away from me. It's not just a job for me. It's a joy. I feel like a little kid out there when I play. There's a line that Jerry Seinfeld said. It's like baseball is a vessel for us to cope with our everyday lives. This disease did it, especially for me. It put a lot in perspective and have a new appreciation for baseball, but a new appreciation for life. Thank you to all the people in the medical world, working around the clock, dedicating a ton of time, putting yourselves. Hope this video finds a lot of people well. As always, let's go Mets.
Alonso's not alone. Lakers star LeBron James did the same, supporting UCLA healthcare workers. And internationally, soccer icon Zlatan Ibrahimovic and NBA star Steph Curry, they're expressing direct support, putting their dollars behind medical professionals during this time of need. This comes on the heels of Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie Irving donating to Feeding America earlier in the week as the country and world continues to battle through the pandemic. In NFL news, the Jets loading up on inside linebackers. The latest is former Raven Patrick Onwuasu. He signed a one-year deal. He made 61 tackles last year, had 3 sacks. He spent most of the year weak side linebacker after struggling early to replace C.J. Mosley. The Jets now have 6 inside linebackers on the roster. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thanks. And the decision to delay the Tokyo Olympics to next year means taxpayers and sponsors in Japan will likely fork over billions of additional dollars just as the global economy slumps. In December, Japan's organizing committee said the event would cost $12 billion, the bulk of which is covered by them and the Tokyo Metropolitan Government. The Nikkei newspaper in Japan now says the delay will trigger an additional $2.7 billion in costs. S&P futures lower by 33 points now. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by MBAF, CPAs and advisors dedicated to solving complex tax and accounting challenges, identifying opportunities, and helping businesses maximize profits. Learn more at MBAFCPA.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks are retreating with U.S. stock index futures and most Asian shares as investors look past stimulus packages to the mounting human impact of the coronavirus outbreak. Government bonds and the yen are advancing. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures, they're down about 40 points. Dow futures down 256. NASDAQ futures down 105. The DAX in Germany is down 2.5%. 10-year Treasury up 20.30. Yield 0.80%, and the yield on the 2-year at 0.29%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.4% on 58 cents at $23.89 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.33% or $5.40 at $16.28.90 an ounce. The euro 1.0946 against the dollar. The yen at 110.03. The British pound 1.1889. And the VIX at 65.37. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the Senate has unanimously passed the $2 trillion COVID-19 rescue package. The vote last night was 96 to nothing. 4 Republican senators were absent due to self-quarantines. The measure now goes to the House. The U.S. death toll from the coronavirus topped 1,000, according to a Johns Hopkins tally. Worldwide, cases have reached more than 472,000. New York State officials are bracing for what they say will be major peaks in the number of people sick with coronavirus. And New Jersey's state health commissioner says the state is on track for the kind of viral surge New York is experiencing. New Jersey has more than 4,400 infections. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It's 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And Jim Paulson joins us now, Chief Investment Strategist at Luthold Wieden Capital Management. Good to talk with you this morning, Jim. Of course, we do have this massive stimulus package making its way through Congress, expected to be signed into law by the end of this week. At the same time, still so much uncertainty about just how this coronavirus is going to play out, whether we could see more peaks in infection. What are you looking for specifically that could give investors some kind of assurance through all this uncertainty?
Well, I think, like you say, there's a lot of bad news, and there's a lot of bad news yet to come. There's no doubt about that, particularly now on the economy, which is in free fall. And we're going to get more data yet this morning on unemployment, for example. But I don't think investors should mistake the fact that there is room for good news, and there is a lot of bad news already embedded in a 35 to 45% decline in stock prices. So, you know, if you just think about it, we certainly could continue to get good reports that the curve is bending on the virus. Italy, for example, as bad as the numbers are that are coming out of there, they're showing some evidence of rollover and deaths and cases there. We could continue to get news on reports of antiviral drug success or successes. We could continue to get news that China's coming back online and other parts of Southeast Asia, for example. We're already continuing to get evidence that some of the intense selling pressure on Wall Street is dissipating to some degree, whether you look at the VIX rolling over, whether you look at the daily volatility diminishing, look at the fact the stock market has been able to hold a flatness now for several trading days, VIX rolling over. And finally, even though economic data is going to be really bad, the question for investors is it going to be worse than feared? And the fears are pretty intense right now. So even if the data is bad, people expect that. Might be, it turns out, that maybe the contraction isn't as bad as feared. So there are some reasons for optimism, I think, even amongst all the gloom we're going to face.
I was going to ask you, with the jobless claims numbers coming out later this morning, there's been some talk that we could see a seven-figure print on jobless claims. Is that the kind of expectation that the markets can sort of put aside, given the expectation that things are looking pretty bad right now?
Well, we'll have to see how the market reacts. But, you know, at this point, I'm not sure that will shock anyone, because that's been out there. Wall Street's been talking about 30% second quarter GDP declines and, you know, the 3 million unemployed, 30% unemployment rates from the Federal Reserve Bowler. I mean, there's a lot of bad data being talked about out there. So I think that we market may be braced for more than we can imagine. I keep coming back to that this is a unique recession in this regard. It is the only recession we've ever had in U.S. history by proclamation. Most of the time, recessions come about, and the market has to debate whether, when the data starts to weaken, whether this is just a slowdown or a recession. So bear markets sort of unfold slowly as the market digests that. This one didn't happen that way. This one, the leaders just announced we're going to shut her down, and instantly the market discounted a full recession. And this is why we had the quickest and deepest bear ever in the first 33 days here. Of trading since February 19th. And my point about that is I think, unlike past bear markets, this market fully discounted a complete collapse early on, because when it was proclaimed, there was no debate. And on the other side of this, in a proclaimed recession, we can proclaim the recovery again pretty quickly. So I think it can be super deep, as long as it's not long. I think the market might have this pretty fully discounted.
So in our last 30 seconds or so here, do you think it makes sense, the suggestion President Trump has put out there, that we could reopen parts of the country while others that are dealing with, you know, more hot spots in this virus continue to weather it out?
Well, I think we put a lot of energy into trying to get ahead of the curve here in this country, and we ought not put ourselves back behind the eight ball again. But I do agree that rather than just taking a one-size-fits-all approach for this country in every place and that let's just shut down everything irregardless, I think we could take a more surgical look at this and start to discriminate a bit on parts of the country doing better than others, and maybe even ages that can return, or maybe even those that are vulnerable versus not. So, yes, I think some of that can start to come.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Much appreciated. Jim Paulson is Chief Investment Strategist at Luthold Wieden Capital Management. Futures headed lower this morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by the New York Community Trust, a public charity working with generous New Yorkers to make an impact on the issues they care about. To set up your fund through the New York Community Trust, visit nycommunitytrust.org.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And at 6:30 on Wall Street, good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The U.S. Senate has approved a $2 trillion plan to stem the economic fallout from COVID-19. The legislation passed unanimously just before midnight and now heads to the House. Here with the details on the package is Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern.
First, for the big business, $500 billion for these big corporations, including airlines. But you have to ban buybacks, limit executive bonuses. Then we go on to the small businesses. They got $350 billion in loans. This is a sector that desperately needs it. But originally, they wanted cash injection, so didn't get exactly everything they wanted. And then, of course, we're seeing direct checks to Americans, but this is for lower and middle income. So if you make over $99,000, you're not going to get it.
Small business is in dire need of this stimulus package, but there's concern the help could get there too late. Here with details is Bloomberg's John Tucker, who joins us live. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, Nathan. The $350 billion in loans will be administered by the Small Business Administration, which isn't exactly known for speed. The SBA's Disaster Loan Assistance Portal this morning reads the following. The portal is undergoing maintenance and will not be available during this maintenance period. They're receiving up to 30,000 phone calls a day, a number that's expected to surge to 60,000. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Global investors appear to be selling the news. Here with more, Bloomberg's Richard Jones.
From a market's perspective, we're kind of seeing the buy the rumor, sell the fact price action. There's a lot of Asian equity markets trading lower today, as are U.S. and European equities. It does feel like further equity upside is going to be harder to come by now that the fiscal stimulus packages are out there already.
Right now, S&P futures are down 1%, and the Europe Stock 600 is currently down 1.25%.
Up next, we get the weekly reading on jobless claims, and it could be the worst report since the end of World War II. Economists forecast claims will hit 1.6 million. We get more from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Restaurants, retailers, manufacturers, you name it. Any way you slice it, it's going to be bad and persist. To complicate it all, computers at state unemployment agencies have been crashing as applications pour in. Phones tied up. In Colorado, this past Monday morning, the state labor department logged 186,000 attempts to reach its call center. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. And coming up in about 30 minutes from now, Jerome Powell makes a rare appearance on morning TV. The Fed chairman sits down for an interview on NBC's Today Show at 7.05 a.m. Wall Street time. Futures, again, moving lower this morning. S&P futures down about 26 points. Dow futures down 133. NASDAQ futures down 68. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and this news update is brought to you by Land Rover. The Own the Adventure sales event is happening now until March 31st. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport. Land Rover, above and beyond. Now here's Michael Barr.
Nathan, thank you very much. New York State officials are bracing for what they warn could be a large peak in coronavirus cases several weeks from now. New York City, the epicenter of the national outbreak, already has nearly 18,000 infections, and local officials warn the worst is yet to come. In a news conference, Mayor Bill de Blasio said that he is grateful for the several thousand ventilators the city has received from the federal government, but adds the city needs many, many more.
The goal for New York City is 15,000 ventilators. So the numbers that we have from this week gets us about a sixth of the way there, and that is important, but we got a lot more to do.
Doctors and nurses on the front line in New York City are pleading for help from federal and local officials. Dr. Colleen Smith works with the Department of Emergency Medicine at Elmhurst Hospital in Queens. She says the situation inside hospitals is becoming more dire by the day.
Unless we get help and supplies and ventilators in another week or two, we won't be able to take care of you.
Dr. Smith says one of the most terrifying parts for nurses is that they're treating the symptoms rather than the illness itself. Meanwhile, New Jersey's health commissioner says the state is on track for the kind of viral surge New York is experiencing. President Trump has signaled that he wants to reopen many businesses and public spaces by Easter, even as health officials warn it's too soon to abandon social distancing measures at that time. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases.
You've got to be realistic, and you've got to understand that you don't make the timeline. The virus makes the timeline. Mm. So you've got to respond in what you see happen. And if you keep seeing this acceleration, it doesn't matter what you say 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you've got to go with what the situation on the ground is.
Planned Parenthood joined other abortion providers in suing Texas over moving to ban abortions during the coronavirus outbreak. One clinic owner says that it has already resulted in 150 cancellations. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. One of the rising stars of the game of baseball, Mets slugger Pete Alonso, took to social media displaying his gratitude to medical staffers, even identifying them personally by name for their hard work during the coronavirus in an uplifting video that later showed their individual reaction, saying, "This is pretty cool. Hard to believe today was scheduled to be opening day." Lakers star LeBron James did the same for the UCLA Medical Center, while global sports icons Steph Curry and soccer's Zlatan Ibrahimovic added financial support to the front lines as the world continues to battle and cope with this disease. Dropping in on Yankees spring training, Luke Voit shares how the Bombers are staying in touch as they're anxious to get back to work.
We have our Madden League, so we got a big group chat going still, so we're in contact every day, and it's still fun. We're still managing to, you know, keep our spirits up, and hopefully we get this figured out. We're back on the diamond here soon, but all the boys are good. We're, you know, we're staying locked in, and when time comes, we'll be ready to go.
Skipper Aaron Boone later added, if baseball goes into November, they may want to consider neutral venues due to weather concerns to play the World Series. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred vowed Wednesday that, quote, baseball will be back and will be part of the recovery, that nothing's off the table. As the sport laid out a plan to return to work from the virus, he hopes the season can come back sometime in May, but the league will work first with experts to ensure everyone's safety. To the NFL, the Ravens continue to be a farm system feeding the Jets. A day after adding former Baltimore wide receiver and Tampa Bay Buccaneer Rashad Perriman, the list of ex-Ravens-turned-Jet continues to grow as they ink inside linebacker Patrick Onwuasu to a one-year deal. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Thank you, Rob. 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Hoarding chloroquine won't cure coronavirus. I'm Max Neeson, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. We need treatments to help stem coronavirus, but urgency and evidence need to be balanced. President Trump's cheerleading of chloroquine and derivative hydroxychloroquine, older malaria drugs with a mixed record in COVID-19, is arguably dangerous. People are reportedly poisoning themselves via self-administration and hoarding it, making prudent evaluation more difficult. But sitting on medicines that might help is also a mistake. New vaccines are far away, and inaction has a human cost. A potential solution is innovation, not just in repurposing old drugs, but in how we test them. The sooner we generate more data, the better. Traditional trials are run without deviation from initial plan and only analyzed once all data is ready. It's a robust but inflexible process. Newer adaptive trials can use data from ongoing experiments to count out treatments that aren't working and add new arms based on emerging evidence. Well-run adaptive trials can be smaller, faster, and more ethical, and are well-suited to this moment. The WHO is starting a large trial of this type, testing multiple coronavirus approaches alongside hydroxychloroquine. It's a good blueprint that should inform further studies to broaden access, answer emerging questions, and examine treatments science the WHO didn't include. It would be best if the president supported responsible efforts to speed development behind the scenes rather than behind the podium. I'm Max Neeson. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPI and go. Just before 6:39 on Wall Street, we're coming off two consecutive days of gains for U.S. stocks. It's the first time that's happened in a month and a half. And opportunities are starting to present themselves in markets. That's according to the CEO of UBS, who says clients are starting to get back in. We spoke with Sergio Armati just an hour ago. Here's what he had to say.
You remember we spoke in the past that cash holdings were very high for a good reason, because people were very prudent and unconvinced about the quality of the market's developments. In that sense, having a large pool of cash available during the major correction has helped investors to manage the situation in an effective way. We do see people taking advantage of new opportunities. For example, this is time, in our point of view, to move into credit. If you look at historically from a risk-reward standpoint of view, not many times in the history where credit has been priced so attractively, and therefore we see people taking advantage of that. But also many clients have been very disciplined in sticking to their long-term asset allocation. Of course, once the dust settles, they will reevaluate how to do that. And in that sense, of course, we are preparing, to exploit opportunities that may be there with stocks or situations or sectors that have been particularly impacted. So I see also clients starting to take opportunities and step by into some opportunities.
That's UBS CEO Sergio Armati speaking with Bloomberg this morning. As S&P futures are pulling back from some earlier losses, but still down 18 points. Dow futures down 61. NASDAQ futures lower by 47 points. This red headline crossed the Bloomberg terminal. Spain reported 655 deaths in the past 24 hours. That is fewer than yesterday. This is Bloomberg. Just before 6:41 on Wall Street, the Senate passes the stimulus. President Trump says he won't be rash with reopening the country. We look at Washington's response to the pandemic next with Brown University political science chair Wendy Schiller on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are lower with S&P futures down 20 points, Dow futures down 85, NASDAQ futures down 51, the DAX in Germany is down 1.6%, 10-year Treasury up 20, 30 seconds, yield 0.80%, and NYMEX crude oil is down 3% or 75 cents at $23.74 a barrel. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the Senate has passed an unparalleled $2.2 trillion economic rescue package steering aid to businesses, workers, and healthcare systems engulfed by the coronavirus pandemic. In New York City, it's a grim sign the pandemic is far from over. Teams have set up a makeshift morgue outside of Bellevue Hospital, something they did during 9/11 and Superstorm Sandy. At one hospital alone, 13 people died in just 24 hours. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 6:48 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C., where some of the top stories include the Senate just before midnight passing that record $2-plus trillion stimulus package to fight the coronavirus. Later this morning, President Trump will take part in a call with G20 leaders on the coronavirus response. And Fed Chairman Jerome Powell makes a rare appearance on a morning news show on television in just a few minutes, actually. Also making news, the president now saying he won't be rash in reopening the country, as the nation's top infectious disease expert warns the coronavirus has its own timetable. Let's get more on all this now. Wendy Schiller is back with us this morning, chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. And the big question, or one of the many big questions, as we continue to deal with this pandemic, Wendy, is whether the president has been in sync with his health experts in terms of the response. What's your assessment at this point as the message, in some ways, seems to shift from the White House?
Well, Nathan, I mean, the president, is a person who will change his remarks or his perception of things based on either new information or inputs from a whole range of sources. Sometimes they're from his own people in the White House. Sometimes they're from other people outside the White House. We've seen this consistently. You know, for health reasons, the good news is that for the past week and a half, he looks like he is on the same page. He is trying to get businesses to contribute more equipment. He is vigorously supporting the stimulus bill. And remember, this is a really big shift for the Republican Party, you know, the party that blocked the Obama stimulus bill, or tried to anyway. It's a big shift, and a lot of that shift is due to Trump. Because Trump's like, look, I got to get the economy back going. I want to win re-election. You know, I don't want this to get totally out of hand. So people can blame him for lots of things, but he's pushed the needle. I mean, he's moved the needle forward on this. In terms of health, Department of Health and Human Services and CDC, they can do a lot of things without giving Trump the details. So you kind of wonder whether there's a lot of things happening that he's not fully briefed on, just so they can keep him from disrupting whatever they're trying to do to protect public health.
What do you think that the president might not be being briefed on at this point? And what about this idea of opening up certain parts of the country that at this point might not at least be seeming to be dealing with as much of a hot spot of this pandemic, while other parts of the country, like on the East and West Coasts, maybe hunker down a little more?
Well, you know, I think that the president has to be persuaded by whomever can persuade him that doing that would just prolong this epidemic. I mean, and that's just clearly the message from all public health officials. You see governors essentially trying to shut down their borders. You know, that's why we have the federal government versus state governments, and this is why we went from the Articles of Confederation to the Constitution. One of the reasons was we had borders erected between states. We had tariffs and customs and different currencies. You can't really have that. You can't have a national functioning economy when one state doesn't trust the people coming in from the other states. And that's true for trucks, for trains, no matter what kind of transportation or commerce you're dealing with. So it's just not feasible. So when you have a state that's not really doing lockdown, and then their people want to come to a state with lockdown, that state with lockdown is going to say no. So you're going to disrupt the supply chain and disrupt the economy. It's not really feasible. The president would be best advised to make sure that everybody is close to being on the same page for at least some modicum of time. We think that we're going to get this thing under control. So that's kind of the lesson he's got to be told. If he opens it up too soon and it comes back, it'll come back in the summer, early fall. That's much more, quote-unquote, dangerous to him electorally than if he just gets a handle on it now.
Is there a perception out there, do you think, that the president is more focused on the economic impact of this pandemic as opposed to the human cost?
I think that's true, but the economic impact is a human cost. I mean, nobody wants to, you know, it's brutal. It's heartbreaking. I mean, nobody wants to get it. We're all really deeply sad about all these people who are dying from it. It's horrible. But the economic toll is one that could really affect all families for a very long period of time. I mean, the kind of damage we're going to see psychologically from the uncertainty here to children who are at home for extended periods of time, maybe getting good remote learning, maybe not. You know, that's a big toll on the country. And I don't think Trump's wrong in saying that there's a big toll in that domain as well. And we're going to have to make a hard choice at some point about balancing that toll. And that's realistic. So I think that that's one of the reasons I think his approval ratings is inching up a little bit, is that I think a lot of people do think that way. The scary part is if you're dealing with something so contagious and so unknown and so deadly, do you make the wrong choice in favor of the economy, and then you damage not only more lives, but you also continue to damage the economy? And I think it's very difficult decisions to make.
Of course, many of our listeners are listening to this program from home offices in New York, and the stories coming out of the city are becoming increasingly dire. Reports of morgues potentially getting filled to capacity, freezer trucks having to be brought in. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has been putting himself out there every day pleading for more federal assistance. What do you see needing to be done in terms of more federal-state coordination, particularly in New York?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is unfortunately the byproduct of the president's sort of hostility now to New York, where he's from New York. He made his whole life and career in New York, but New York doesn't vote for him. New York hasn't been particularly kind to him in general in terms of political opinion, and he's just thinking, who supports me and who doesn't? But if you look at Louisiana, and I understand New York is sort of the economic and cultural capital of the country, if not the world, but Louisiana is experiencing a horrific rate of increase and a horrific rate of infection and death, and that's Trump country. So it's a misread for the president not to help New York, because other cities, particularly like New Orleans and other cities that do vote for him, are going to face the same issue and have the same headlines. And he will be held more accountable by those voters than possibly the voters in New York. So it's a misread by the president, and it's a very unfortunate thing for New York.
Thank you, Wendy, as always. Wendy Schiller is the chairman of the Political Science Department at Brown University. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:54 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report, and we are joined by John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Yeah, Karen, small businesses around the country in dire straits as the virus outbreak brings the economy to a standstill. The rescue package from Congress promises $350 billion in small business loans. There's concern that help could come too late, the loans being administered by the Small Business Administration, which, of course, is not known for its speed. Darren Van Tassel owns an arcade and a family entertainment center down in Georgia with a staff of 100 employees, and he joins us now. Darren, how do you expect this rescue package to help your business, and what steps are you taking?
Two strategies. Absolutely went to the disaster relief on the SBA website. Application was done. It is in. Did that Thursday of last week. I already received notification on Sunday that it was under review, so I'm happy to report that was an unbelievably quick turnaround time for the review to begin. On the unemployment side in Georgia, because when it was declared a health emergency by the governor, the stipulations that came out of the bill last Wednesday, or the law last Wednesday, were employers have to do the registration for unemployment, which is different rather than the employees. We've got four or five employees who are home on the mandatory sick leave and the amended clause for the Family Medical Leave Act. So there's all kinds of different sort of pieces. We're in the short rows of it right now. We're in the first couple weeks, so the negative excitement will quickly start turning into a long-term angst.
How soon do you need that help from SBA?
Can't be fast enough. We'd use it right now. And if we had it now, it could keep employees on payroll. Okay. I mean, just from where I sit, I can't imagine there's not a small business in America who's not filling these things out. So I can only imagine just the sheer logistics challenge of processing these are going to be.
What would you want to ask the SBA administrator?
You know, right now, and they may not know either, you know, what is our cap? What can these funds be used for? Or is it the payroll part? You know, are these going to be at zero interest? Because they're loans. It's not a bailout. These are absolutely loans that they get paid back. You know, just how low is the interest rate? Happy to pay them back. That part makes perfect sense. Is the payroll piece forgiven? I don't know. And, you know, that's the challenge of legislation, of course, but I think all those big questions that I just asked, you multiply them by the millions of small businesses, and we all have the same ones.
All right, Darren, thanks. Darren Van Tassel, small business owner in Georgia, running an arcade and family entertainment center there. Right now, the Small Business Administration receiving up to 30,000 phone calls a day. That number is expected to surge to 60,000. Now, the magnitude of the rescue plan, unprecedented for the SBA, with $350 billion in loans to give out. Last year, it distributed, just for comparison's sake, $28 billion, less than 10% of the amount of the plan being passed by Congress. Karen.
All right, John Tucker, thank you. S&P futures this morning are down about 30 points. Dow futures down 160, and NASDAQ futures down about 74. 10-year Treasury up 17 30 seconds, yield 0.81%. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrell, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.